androids, cyborgs, robots, AIs. Call them what you will, but you have to acknowledge our complex relationship with our high-tech counterparts. Rick Valentin from Illinois State University's Arts Technology Department invites you to explore the cinematic history of our strange love affair with robots in a film festival running this week at the Normal Theater. Valentin finds our relationships with robots so varied and compelling that when titling this fest, Robots, he insisted on including an exclamation point.
It's not just that sort of 1950s or even 1920s reaction to robotics where
people were freaked out.
Yeah, there's always a little bit of fear, excitement and fear. Classic science fiction combination, right? But the modern day, right now, I think this is one of the huge things we're talking about.
Seriously, we're still a little freaked out about, I mean, we're talking robots, cyborgs, androids, everybody under that big tech umbrella. We're still freaked out about this?
I think so. And now, because it feels like it's a couple of weeks away as opposed to 10 years away or 50 years away or 100 years away, we've been promised robots for a long time. And so in some ways, people are kind of used to the idea. And because of these films that we have in the festival, they've explored and gone through a lot of thoughts and possible scenarios because of these films. But now it doesn't seem so much as fiction. It's just kind of like, oh, yeah, what's going to happen when I have a robot housemate or I have a self-driving car, even just your car will be a robot in a way, right? It will be intelligent and making decisions for you, and you'll kind of give yourself over to a car, which Knight Rider...
It's not something we're used to.
Yeah. I mean...
Knight Rider, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I think of you know, David Hasselhoff and Knight Rider and all that kind of stuff, and that's kind of funny and fun, but then when you actually start exploring it and thinking deeper, you go, ooh, that is a little weird. Like, what if I get a free self-driving car, but then it always drives me by Krispy Kreme donuts every day because the advertisers have paid to have your route, you know, by their store or their billboards and everything like that. It starts, it's like, oh yeah, okay. It's a little more disturbing than I thought it would be.
But it's not just the technology that maybe is disturbing to us today. It's the speed at which the technology is coming to us. We as humans maybe aren't as adaptive to it as quickly as we think we are.
I think we adapt, but we don't have time to think. I think you're right about that, is that things are happening so quickly. No one did a survey in 2007 and said, would you like a little tiny computer in your pocket that does everything and controls your life and you spend, you know, half of your day with it in front of your face? Well, actually, if somebody did a little interview with me about my smartphone or about the potential of a smartphone, I would have said, yeah, oh yeah, I want that. We always kind of just say, oh yeah, that's a cool thing, we want it, and we don't really spend a lot of time.
We don't think about the ramifications of it.
Yeah, we never had a big meeting, a town hall meeting, a universal world meeting about, ooh, smartphones, is that a good idea? And so at least with science fiction, right, that's the one outlet it seems like we have to explore these ideas. And in the past, though, yeah, science fiction, it was like, oh, well, this is 50 years out. And now it's really starting to seem like, oh, yeah, this is good. Good somebody thought about this in the 1950s and the 1970s and the 1980s, because now we're actually going to have to think about it because we don't have time. It's already here.
Well, speaking of the 1950s, let's start off with your first film, which will be running on the 4th at 7 p.m. at the Normal Theater. You've chosen Forbidden Planet and, of course, creating quite a sensation in this sci-fi version of Shakespeare's Tempest is Robbie the Robot.
What's great about Robbie the Robot is he's not the malevolent sort of robot that we're used to. He's dangerous, he's a powerful tool, and he's a servant.
Welcome to Altair 4, gentlemen. I am to transport you to the residence. If you do not speak English, I am at your disposal with 187 other languages along with their various dialects and sub-tongues.
You are a robot, aren't you?
That is correct, sir. For your convenience, I am monitored to respond to the name Robbie.
He's much more sort of sympathetic, I would say, and helpful in kind of that early idea of a robot. And Forbidden Planet in of itself is really, you know, ruminating about human intelligence and can we handle this power and everything like that. And so Robbie is not the source of trouble, we are. And so that's what's
But
really,
aren't we always?
Yeah, exactly. And so that's the idea that always comes up again and again, is that we're the ones creating these robots. We're gods trying to, or acting as God, trying to create versions of ourselves, and we make mistakes, right? And so it always does boil down to us and the tools we've made or these machines that we've made in our own image, but then they go horribly awry in some way.
Robot movie fun fact, though, this is the first entirely electronic commercial film score that was ever done.
Yeah, and so for me, you know, with a music background and a technology background, the soundtrack is amazing. Initially, the composers were supposed to just do the special effects for the film, and they just kind of went all out and, you know, did a whole soundtrack for the film, even though they weren't asked to do that. It's an amazing blending of sci-fi sound effects and then avant-garde tape-based composition.
Well, you're also showing the final cut of Blade Runner. That'll be on the 5th. And this is going to be the final theatrical showing. They're going to embargo this film because the sequel, Blade Runner 2046, will be coming out shortly. So get your tickets for this one.
Yeah, it's your last chance. I have mixed feelings. I'm somewhat excited about the sequel, but I'm also worried about it. You just never know. And so, yeah, this is kind of the last chance to see Blade Runner before it either gets enhanced in a positive way or reduced by a reimagining, a sequel, a reconfiguration of it. So, yeah, and honestly, any opportunity to see the original Blade Runner on a big screen is a wonderful opportunity because it holds up. It's really the apex of special effects in that era, and I'd say almost any era before everything became computerized. Again, I'm a computer person. I love computer effects, but there's something about that traditional analog effects that they use in Blade Runner that's really just beautiful. It's a beautiful film to watch, and thematically, it's an amazing film, too.
So what is Ridley Scott? What is his take on artificial intelligence, on robots, androids, cyborgs? So what is Ridley Scott saying about this technology mixing in with humans?
It's partly Ridley Scott's vision and then Philip K. Dick's vision, where the lines start blurring, where if it looks like a human, you infuse it with emotions and you have it act like a human.
She doesn't know.
She's beginning to suspect, I think.
Suspect? How can it not know what it is?
Commerce is our goal here at Tyrell. More human than human is our motto. Rachel is an experiment, nothing more.
Why is it different than a human? You know, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it is a duck, which is a horrible reduction of the film, but it is kind of it is kind of the theme, is the question. And so you have someone, you know, Harrison Ford, who, depending on the version you watch, is questioning his, or you question even his humanity, but it's even in that abstraction where he is basically assassinating these robots. And then the question is if they feel real and they act real and they seem to have real memories, then how is that different than murder? This is a moral issue that we're going to be struggling with, even with genetic modification and creating life in the laboratory and all those types of things. It's not simply robots. It's these questions of if a company makes a humanoid person, is that a object or is it an actual independent life form that we need to, you know, deal with in the same way we deal with a living being?
You're also showing Westworld on the 6th. The original, we're talking about from the 1970s, that has Yul Brynner in it. And of course, it has new life now on HBO as a series. Why did you choose Westworld?
Well, for that reason, I love Westworld. Just because when I saw it as a kid, it was that first...
Did it scare you? Because it scared the bejesus
out
of me.
It scared me a lot. Yeah, and that's what I'm also remembering. I'm thinking, oh, maybe my kids can watch this. And I'm like, oh, no, they can't because I saw it on TV and they would hack it up. So yes. It wasn't as bad. And it was terrifying.
Even then.
Hacked up for TV. Yeah. Yes. It's a great example of that classic, I guess it would be classic Michael Crichton narrative, which is you have these complex systems, whether or not it's a computer system or a biological system.
Nothing can possibly go wrong.
I'm shot.
Go wrong.
Raw.
Go wrong.
Oh, my God.
Shut down.
An amusement park gone awry, right? So Jurassic Park, same theme. But with the robotics, it's that same idea. We've created something, but what happens when something goes wrong? The unpredictable. And so then looking at how that's viewed in that 70s perspective of, oh, we've got these big systems we're building that we can't control. And now the new HBO series is somewhat the same idea, but it's also more about, oh, this sort of elite humans creating this whole society and culture and life form. What happens when that life form decides, oh, we don't want to be controlled by you anymore? And that's an even more complex narrative. And so being able to see the contemporary Westworld and comparing it to the older Westworld, you get to see, oh, how have people's concerns changed about robotics? And then how are they kind of the same?
You're also including the animated film WALL-E on the 7th. That's going to be at 7 p.m.
So WALL-E is great because it kind of brings things full circle with Forbidden Planet. WALL-E is not malevolent at all. He's a servant.
He's adorable.
Robot. Yeah, he's adorable. He's a servant. And the one film that's somewhat optimistic, there's a lot of dire messages about maintaining the Earth and everything like that. But the story of WALL-E himself is that a robot that was built for one intention, right, to clean up our mess, winds up being the person, the character that saves humanity and saves the natural world, right? And so this is the important thing to remember, I think, is that we always worry about creating something and it having unexpected results. So that happens with most science fiction films, talking about computers or talking about robots. But often, yeah, we don't know what's going to happen. We have these things come into our lives, but that just because we don't know what's going to happen doesn't mean the unexpected is going to be bad either. It could be unexpected is, oh yeah, we create these tools that are supposed to help us, but then we don't even understand the possibility or what they could do to help us in the future. We don't really know what the final result or relationship will be. And so WALL-E is great in that respect, as it just kind of has that message that, oh yeah, technology, we should fear it maybe, but we should also invest some hope in it, which we do. I think we always do.
Later on the 7th at 10 p.m., you're going to be showing that great 80s film, RoboCop.
RoboCop, yes, is definitely the dark side. But what's also really interesting about RoboCop is those same ideas about creating a life form that we see in Blade Runner. But this is the case where we have someone who dies and then is sort of reanimated with part of their soul, maybe part of their humanity, but incorporated within a machine. And that's really, I think, the movie that connects the most to our near future, where we're going to become more and more hybrid creatures. You know, we already have artificial limbs and artificial organs. And so that idea of enhancing the human body, and then when does something stop being human and start becoming machine? That issue, I think, is going to start becoming more and more contentious and upfront and a real life issue much sooner than we expect.
That's Rick Valentin, organizer of the Arts Tech Film Fest, Robots, with an exclamation point. It runs tonight through Friday at the Normal Theater. I'm Laura Kennedy.